Good afternoon. Welcome to The Journey 8. I'm your host, Reverend Judy Hosner, and I invite you to sit back and take a few moments to breathe as we share this journey together.
It's Tuesday afternoon, and Tuesday afternoon means the Journey 8. So here we are, and we got a packed show today. But first, as usual, come the announcements. Bible trivia. Bible trivia is up and going. Where are you? A lot of people are playing, but they're not recording their scores. If you don't record your scores, I can't tell who's winning. So for those of you who didn't hear last week, Bible trivia can be found on www.purposegames, purposegames.com. If you record your name and your email, it doesn't go anywhere except to me. And you can play the game. There's 10 questions in the game. We are going to switch those 10 questions for next week at midnight tonight. So you got till midnight. Once you get into purposegames.com and you register, you need to go to tournaments at the top of your screen and then find us. We're on page 2, the Journey 8. And see how you do. Remember, midnight on Tuesday, the game changes. So good luck to you. If you have any questions or need any help, you can email me at jhosner@closerwalkwithyou.com. Number 2, Jen Phipps Quisenberry's trip to Africa is still on. All of us are praying for her safety in Mozambique in October, but as of today, her trip is still on, and if you'd like to donate, you can go to gofundme.com. All the information is on my webpage at closerwalkwithyou.com. This week is a special week. I have a lady that I've been waiting to interview for a little while now. Her name is Gwen McNutt. And she wrote a book called Angels Never Die. And I'm going to forewarn you that when you buy this book, you better have about 2 boxes of Kleenex ready. I read through it, and I think I'm now a stockholder in the Kleenex company. A wonderful book, and we will be interviewing her in the second half of the show. Gwen will tell us all kinds of things. Anyway, so that is the news for today. And California, thank God you had some rain last night. So, I thought I would do something unusual today and actually follow the lectionary. Now, I know that is totally out of sync for me, but it goes hand in hand with a story that we had, or a lesson we had a couple weeks ago about the prodigal son. This particular week was the story of Jacob and his brother Esau. So I decided, well, I didn't decide, you know how that goes. The God phone rang, and so we have a lesson today on finding our way back home. Yes, it should be interesting. All right, so as you know, I don't even know if I gave you the scripture. I got so involved in writing this thing. Yes, I did, somewhere in the midst of the lesson. So the scripture warning is no truck drivers, pilots, plane operators of any sort, train operators, women driving while putting on makeup, and or anyone else who could endanger themselves or someone else, please don't pick up your Bible and read. Wait till you get home and trust that we know it well. Are you ready? It's Genesis 28, and it's verses 13 through 15, basically a part of it anyway. So we're going to talk about finding our way back home. And here we go. Read an article recently about a gentleman named Frank Warren. Now, Frank was an interesting kind of guy. Among other things, Frank was an artist who, after a troubling period in his own life, decided to do a project for the next art show. So he decided he was going to hand out 3,000 self-addressed stamped postcards to people on the street, just randomly. And all he asked was that these postcards would be filled out by the people, mailed back to him with their deepest, darkest secret, anonymously. No name, no address, no nothing. Just mail them back. Put on there your secret. And if you wanted to, you could scribble some art on the postcard. And he let everyone know that it was going to be for an art show that he was putting together. And he wanted them to feel free to express themselves, so it was all anonymous. All right, so what happened? What started as a simple art project in 2004, to his surprise, grew to over 100,000 postcards, many of which were their own work of art. Yes, 3,000 postcards is what he handed out. What he ended up with was 100,000 postcards. This simple project led to the internet site that we now have called postsecret.com. And if you go to postsecret.com, you'll find it's a bulletin board kind of bloggish thing where people still today, anonymously if they choose, can put a postcard on there and leave a message. Postsecret.com has opened the way for several other websites with the same style of program where you can confess your deepest secrets. I remember one of the pictures in the article I was reading was a picture of Santa Claus with two young boys sitting on his lap, probably vintage around 1980. On the postcard was just a simple sentence: "I wish my two sons would contact me." That's it. Thinking that if the sons ever saw it, they would know because of the picture. Another postcard had a picture of hands praying and the words, "I don't know how to go back to God. And I want to more than anything else in the world." Two perspectives of the same problem. How do you find your way back home? What is it that makes it so difficult to find our way back home? Well, the God phone rang, and of course I have three answers to that. There's probably many more. We'll tackle the first one, and I think all three of these will probably hit home to a lot of people, including myself. Our first one is the natural rebellion in the human heart. You know, I taught a lesson, as I mentioned not so long ago, about the prodigal son. And I suppose if we had a time machine and we could interview the character of this parable, I would render a guess that he might have said something like, "My dad is too strict and I want to breathe my own air." Or just that he was bored and wanted to sow some wild oats. Like Jacob, the prodigal son was trying to get away from his older brother. But unlike Jacob, it wasn't that his brother was trying to kill him. He just wanted to change in scenery. You know, that decision for the prodigal son led to chaos. And his life and separation from his family was not at all how he dreamed it. So he began to put his feet on the road to unite himself with them. You know, most of us cannot say that we've had blinding experiences like Paul did on the way to Damascus, or seen the sky open, or even burning bushes. Thank God. You know, I'm not sure I could do with the burning bushes thing. But still, there are times when God comes unexpectedly in our lives. And maybe in your sleep, it might be when you're at least thinking about it. It might be when you need him most or when you need him least, or when you think you need him least. Might come at the middle of the night or the middle of the day. It might be in times of crisis or depression, or it might be in great joy. But as I said last week, God is a God of the unexpected. The God phone can ring any time of day or night. Trust me, I know that. And every time might be when you least expect it. You might not want to hear what he's going to ask of you, but let go and let God take care of you. Don't let your rebellious spirit keep you away. You know, I see a lot of people today who would rather continue in their dysfunctional lifestyle, which is not working for them at all, than to turn their lives over to God. They would like for God to help them with some of their problems, but they have no intentions of turning their lives around and surrendering to God. Oh my gosh, no. They are caught up in a web of self-destruction, but they would rather live with the destruction of their choices than have to give up control of their lives, control to a God who would take better care of their lives. And this could be alcohol, it could be drugs, it just could be a dysfunctional personality. Either way, it seems that our innate human nature is to rebel. You know, to fight the inevitable and to fight what is good for us. Change, I can tell you from a personal experience, change comes hard. I don't do change well. But I'm learning. I'm learning. So, rebellion, yeah. Number two, what is it that makes it difficult for us to find our way back home? Yeah, not everyone is a rebel. Some folks are lost and truly do not know how to get back to God. So the second thing that makes it hard to find our way back home is simple. We don't know the way. The reality is that some are so lost for so long, they have forgotten which road to take to get back to God. Well, the good news is God will meet you right where you are. You don't have to find your way back to him. You don't need a GPS computer or navigate by the stars. When you pray, your Heavenly Father will come to you. Right where you are, right as you are. No ifs, ands, or buts. Just be sure you are home when he knocks on the door. Or answer the God phone when it rings. And then leave the rest to him. Even Jacob, who was not a very cool dude. I mean, Jacob is the kind of guy who stole his brother's birthright and inheritance. Pretended he was Esau to his father, Isaac. To get his inheritance, steal him. He was not a good dude. But even Jacob had his God moment. If you remember the story, you know, here he is. And he's been running for a while with his wife and his family. And he's in a foreign land. And Esau is on his trail with one thing in mind. Or at least Jacob thought it was one thing in mind, to kill him. So Jacob's doing the running thing. And finally he realizes that maybe he needs to do something else here. This just is not working for him. And he's scared. And he doesn't have a clue at how he's going to get away from his brother one last time. So the good news is, as I said earlier, we can't figure out how to get to God. He finds a way to get to us. Finally, one night comes when Jacob's been on the run. He falls asleep and dreams of the ladder, staircase of light leading to heaven, and the very throne of God. And God tells Jacob that he will inherit the promises made to his grandfather, who is Abraham, and says to him the same words, I am the Lord, the God of your father Isaac, and his father before him, Abraham. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you're lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth. All peoples of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I promised you. Yeah. So Jacob names the land Bethel. Bethel's Hebrew for house of God. Long story short, the feud between Jacob and Esau ends, and a new life of Jacob, a new chapter in Jacob's life begins. You know, there's also the second half of that story where Jacob actually fights with God, has a hand-to-hand battle with God in the middle of the night, a vision, but God breaks his hip. And so, I mean, Jacob's the only one in the Bible I know of, in fact, I know, that fought hand-to-hand with God and survived. I think that's a pretty astounding kind of thing. Either way, it took some pretty radical stuff for Jacob to find his way back home. And you know, the issue of finding our way back home to God is one so driven to the heart that we fail sometimes to hear with our ears when God does speak. So there's a story, and I'm going to try and tell it right. I'm not good at telling these kinds of stories, but I'm going to try. Story about an agnostic that fell off a cliff, and as he was falling, he grabbed a small twig, and knowing that he was about ready to lose his grasp and fall to the earth and die, he calls out and says, if there is a God up there, please help me. God comes back immediately. Oh, my son, you do believe in me. I am so happy you believe in me. The agnostic says, I believe in you. Okay, what do I have to do? God answers, trust me, let go. A few seconds goes by. His grasp is getting less and less. And you hear him say, is there anyone else up there? I don't think he liked the answer that God gave him. But most of the time, we don't. There are a lot of people who would want to know God is up there until he tells them to trust him and let go. They want to go home until he tells them that what they have to do to get there. Ah, we humans. Always wanting but never willing to give in and let God do his job. His job. What is it that makes it difficult for us to find our way back home? Finally, the third reason. We have to decide what's really important. Jacob's story is a good example how we sometimes need to go back to the people we have wronged and set our feet on the straight and narrow and find our path back to God. One of the first steps in AA for me and for anyone going to AA for recovery is to go to all those you have wronged and ask for forgiveness and, when possible, make restitution for the wrongs you've done. This is a lesson straight from the Bible. Until you can decide what is important in your life, God or your addiction, you cannot go home. Until we make it right with God, he cannot work in our lives. It's plain, it's simple, and it's difficult. It's difficult, it's probably one of the hardest things I ever had to do. And every day, 33 years later, still working. Every day. God will never force you to make a decision. is not like that. We are created as beings of choice. He gave us that gift, the gift of choice. It is the one thing that separates us from any other animal on earth. It is hard. God never forces you to decide what's important in your life. It is one that must come from you and you alone. When I stopped drinking, it wasn't because my family said I had to. It was because I said it was time to make a change. And I did. I did then. God opened his doors and peace was given. And there are days that I wonder what would have happened to me had I not stopped. So no matter what the hardships are, no matter whether you're in pain, anger, grief, despair, you can find your way back home. We're like homing pigeons, really. No matter how far away we are, somehow we always make it back home. Somehow we always find that right way. Some of us have to do it two or three times to get it right, but we always find our way back. And when we do, each time God celebrates. In a few minutes, you're going to hear, as I mentioned, the story from Gwen McNutt. And I can't help but say that if there was a stellar case for finding your way back to God, this would be one of them. It's a great example of how God works in our lives for reconciliation and peace. We need to know he's always there. And if you don't know that, just reach out. Lambano, as my pastor would tell me. Reach out and grab. You know, all you have to do is say, I'm lost. I can't find my way back. You'll do the rest. But you gotta be willing to do the work. You know, when I was younger, which was a long time ago, I used to think that if I worked hard enough and long enough, I could make anything happen. And to some degree, that was true. But more often than not, it was not true. Because if you set your sights to the wrong goal, you will not get the end result that you want. Prodigal son, Jacob, and many other stories in the Bible go on to say, listen, you know, you can screw up big time. You can make a mess of it. But if you stand still for just a moment, find your way back, take 10 minutes out of your 100-hour week and say, I'm lost. And I know that for guys that's really hard because they don't do directions well. But if you say you're lost, I don't mean that. That's a joke, really. If you say you're lost and you really mean it, God will meet you, greet you, and take you by the hand and walk you back home. So we're going to try and see if we can find Gwen online. And we're going to try to learn something from a story that is just a phenomenal story. I can't tell you how great this book is. And, you know, it's called Angels Never Die. And angels never do die, but it is happy, sad, frustrating, angry, you name it. There's just about every emotion in there that you can think of. So, Gwen, are you there?
Hello?
Hello, there she is. Hi, Gwen. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm all right, and welcome to the Journey 8. And I have a whole list of questions for you, but the first thing I want you to do is kind of give us a little idea of where you are today. How is your husband, and how are you doing?
How my husband is doing today? Mm-hmm. I better can hear you.
Hmm. Okay.
You need to speak up. I can hear you.
Okay. Let's try and turn this volume up a little bit. How's that?
Okay. Right. Okay. Good.
There you go. All right. So I understand he had surgery on his neck.
Right. And he's doing much better today. And just a few months back, he had a surgery. He had a bone on his spinal cord, and he had to remove it. And it's kind of like he was paralyzed after that on his right arm. But he's doing much better today.
Good, good. So I got to tell you, I read your book. I made it through it. I think there's lots of tear stains on the pages. A phenomenal book it is. You're very talented.
Thank you.
And like I said, I went through two boxes of Kleenex doing it. I think a good place to start would be the beginning. What do you think?
Oh, it's fine. Great.
Okay. All right. What was your childhood like growing up the daughter of a preacher?
Actually, it was good. And then it was, as a child, it was sort of torturous to me because, for one thing, coming up as a child, as a, you know, a pastor child, there's many things that you don't understand about that type of life and why they trying to bring you up and things like that. My father was a pastor, and my mother, you know, she was the missionary there, and they had their own rules and regulation of how, you know, they want to bring up their children. So we had to dress the way they want us to dress, and I don't ever remember going to a ball game or anything like that. But and so I did feel a little different, you know, from other children. But the thing of it was that I felt loved by them, and I knew they loved me, and I loved them. So that was the one good part. And they were trying to do what they could to keep me and my sisters and brothers out of trouble, because I'm the youngest one out of 13 children, and they did what they knew best. Yeah, they did what they knew best to keep us out of trouble. But, and like I said, the pastor child, you're growing up and you don't understand all the rules and you can't go to ball games and they make sure you don't expose your bodies, you know, either the girl or the boys, you know, you have a certain way you need to dress. And they kind of, you know, I didn't understand all of that. But as I grew up, you know, as growing up, I saw that what they were trying to do, and I felt that they taught me the golden rules of the Holy Bible, and they taught me the power of prayer and to trust God in tough times. And that was very important to me, and it's still important to me now.
That's good.
So they do make an example out of you, you know, as a pastor child. You get made an example out of, and, you know, you're standing up in church, and if you're talking and doing stuff in church, you're going to get made an example out of.
So I understand that when you met Henry, wasn't such a smooth transition. You want to tell me about that? Evidently, he wasn't a Christian.
Well, when I met Henry, I was a Christian. I was a Christian, and I was trying to do right. But once I met Henry, you know, doing the church rules, and they have like in that denomination that you're in, they want you to marry someone or get with someone who in that same denomination. If you're a Pentecostal, they want you to date someone or may become married to the person in the denomination. But when I met Henry, he was not a Christian. I was a Christian, but once we got together, and my family all loved him. He was a great guy, you know. He was talented in basketball and tall, handsome. So everybody loved him, but it's just that thing about the denomination, you know, the Bible rule, the church rule. So they would kind of throw the conflict between me and him, because if I marry Henry, I would become a sinner. And if we just start dating one another, I can be drawn back into the world by him. So it was kind of a conflict thing. So I wind up leaving the church, and we got married.
How'd that work out?
Right now, I'm still with Henry. After 38 years, we have our ups and downs, just like any other marriage, you know, but God is with us. He's with us, and yeah, it's a happy, pretty happy marriage.
So the book centers around your four sons, and can you describe to me, there was two different diseases they had, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And you have two daughters, too, also, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And so can you give us kind of a little summary of how this all unfolded? How did you find out, first of all, that they were sick?
Actually, after all of my children was born, and we had started having a problem with our oldest child, our oldest son, and the doctors never diagnosed what was going on with him. So we went through this procedure for years before we found out what the problem was. And they were through by Rockefeller University in New York City. An expert there found out what was going on. And so we were sent to, once at St. Jude, we started off at St. Jude Hospital, and then we were later sent to, once my boys, they found out all four of my boys had this disease called Fanconi anemia, and the other one is Wishart-Alger syndrome. They're both diseases they had. And so they wind up going to St. Jude for many years, and after that, they couldn't really diagnose what was going on, so they sent them to Rockefeller University in New York City. And that's when they found out exactly what was going on with those boys, after years and years of suffering and not knowing what was going on with them.
And, you know, throughout this whole trial, how did having this constant, you know, taking them to the hospitals and seeing them get sicker, how did this affect your faith?
Well, it really... Actually, at the beginning, it did not affect my faith. Those boys were the foundation of my faith. They kept me strong. They kept me going and believing in God and trusting God. And when my faith started to, I took the core of my faith, I put it that way, is when they started to die. And that's when it started affecting my faith. I held on for a long time until my youngest son passed away, and that's when I decided I had enough. You know, I just felt that I was tired of holding on to that faith, and I began to just go out and just do whatever I wanted to do, and it wasn't the right thing to do. I started to club hopping, I started to drinking, I started to doing everything that I was not doing at first when I was holding on.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And you know, as human beings, we do such painful things to ourselves when we're in pain, you know. Gosh, I could understand, you know, losing four of your six children, you know. So yeah. What brought you back? What helped you come back to God?
Actually, out of many years, and I began to think about... I got two daughters, and I got two grandboys now and my husband. And we all kind of be around in the same area, in the same place, same home. And things began to happen around me, and I just saw that what I was doing really wasn't getting me anywhere. And I said, and I was brought up in a Christian home, and it in the like I say, the prayers and the faith and all that was instilled in me from my parents as a childhood. So I began to look at my family, and it began seemed like they was going astray. You know, they was getting further and further out in the world. Even I was too, and I know in my mind, something keep telling me that this is not the right way. This, you shouldn't do this. And I kept looking at my children, how they was going further out in the world, and how I had taught them different. And my mind told me that you need to take a change. You need to change so you can tell them about not doing what they're doing, because they're not going to listen to you when you're doing what they're doing. So I made that turnaround and started doing something better. So that's what brought me back. I started watching my family, and I started watching me. And I know it wasn't the right way to go. And it wasn't going to help me at all to do what I was doing.
When you found that moment where, you know, it really rang true to you or rang home, were you one of the God just show me the right way back, or did it take you, like some of us, a little bit of time to really, you know, have it sink in? That
yes, ma'am. It took me a little bit time because I stayed out there for a good while, and right now I would say that I'm just, you know, once where I once been, but I don't do the things that I used to do. It took me a good time to really think about it, because I wanted to just go out there and just forget about everything, and I wanted to find that peace that I thought that the world would really have, you know. It seemed like they have it, and I thought where I was not, it wasn't good enough, because I'm doing all I could to do right, and all of this has happened to me, and that wasn't peace to me from struggling. And so it did take me a time to come back, but the Lord was showing me, too, that that wasn't the place that I need to be. It wasn't anything that major was happening in my life, but like I said, it was my family, and I love my family, and I knew that wasn't the right way to go, and that's what I need to make an example, too. By changing my life or taking my life or, you know, changing around.
Right.
So,
what when you look back today, what did your daughters in the time, shall we call it the dark time, what were they, how old were they?
Well, it started from, actually, from... I said, from my youngest daughter, she was about a year old when it started.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I said about 3 years old, I believe. I can't exactly remember, but I know they were very young, maybe five. And my oldest daughter, she was 14. But it started way before then, because she was the one who had to give a bone marrow to one of her brothers.
Uh-huh.
So she was 14 when she done that. So
yeah.
It's been going on for years. Ever since me and my husband and I have been married, I said we started maybe in our early 20s having sickness in our family. And
yeah.
It went on from there until I went up in age.
Yeah. So it took them a long time to find out. How did your sons hold up? I mean, what was their means to anchor when all they could hear from the doctors is, we don't know what's wrong with you. We don't know what's wrong with you.
Actually, my boys, they was just full of life. It really didn't seem to bother them very much. But it was tearing me apart, because I wanted somebody to know something, know how to heal these boys. There's something going wrong with them. And somebody got to know something, how to make it better. And I wasn't looking at it as a life-threatening disease. I was looking at it as something that can be changed. And my boys, they really didn't, you know, it didn't take effect on them until they got a certain age and they wanted to get out and play like other children, and they wasn't able to do that. And they didn't like that part. They just wanted to know why they couldn't go out and play. Why, you know, just why?
Yeah. But, yeah, that's always a big question, isn't it? Why me?
Yeah.
Yeah. And your husband at the time, how was he doing? Dealing with the illness of all four of his sons.
He was, to me, he was like me, myself. You know, he was dealing with the faith. He seemed to have caught on faith and believed it in God, that whatever was going on with the boys, that they was going to be healed from that. And it just could not be nothing life-threatening. And he took it. You know, he did a lot of praying, and I did too. We just prayed every day and night about our situation with our children. But he seemed to take it, you know, very strongly, you know, how to just keep the faith. And as well as I, when our youngest son passed away, and we had one more son left, it kind of like took effect on the both of us. You know, it took us to the core of our faith. I put it that way, you know. Just couldn't go no further. This is it. You know, how much can we bear? How much are you going to put on us? This is enough. We got one child left, one son left, and we was looking forward to keep him. But eventually, he was taken too.
Yes. If you had, if you were sitting in a room with someone who is enduring the same kind of tragedy, maybe a different disease, but the same thing, what words of encouragement would you have for them?
Well, first of all, I would probably tell them, keep the faith. You know, keep the faith, even though times seem hard. And don't walk away from your children. If you're going through with someone, your baby's sick or whatever, don't walk away from them. Keep them encouraged. And most of all, the children seem like they keep us strong. And I would definitely tell them to keep the faith. Because I have seen parents that walk away and leave their children in the hospital alone. And they call those children the hospital children. They're the hospital babies. Because the parents never turn around and come back to see how they're doing and take them home with them. They leave them. Stay with your child. Keep the faith. Keep them encouraged. You never know how it's going to turn out.
That's right.
Until it happens. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you had one thing to say to those of us who have, you know, very close-knit families and stuff, if you had anything to change other than what I'm calling the dark time in your life, would there be anything else you would change other than, of course, your son's not dying?
If there was anything I can change from going through with my children, is that what you, from the dark times? Only thing I would say, if I knew that I was going to have sick children, I probably would not have any. I might not have had any children. But see, there's something that in the dark side, you don't even know unless you have some type of, DNA, I don't know what to call it, something to know what your spouse is about and yourself, if you know you can have children or not.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I would not probably have children. You know.
Yeah, that's always a tough one, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, it's tough. You know.
There's such a blessing, but you know, it can be so painful too. So,
right.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the show, and I really hope that your book touches a lot of people. It touched me. Angels Never Die. Where can people get it?
Actually, they can go to Amazon.com, they can go to createspace.com, and they can go to Barnes & Noble Marketplace. So any of those sites, you can go to gwenmcnutt.com.
Okay.
And I can, let me spell Amazon, AMAZON.com, and create, CREATE.com, and Gwen, GWENMCNUTT.com.
Great, great. And I just encourage you, you've gotten a great start with this book. I encourage you to think about, you know, maybe a future book. The story has been very riveting, to say the least. And I applaud you for being, you and your husband, for being as strong as you are through such a trial. And I know that that you will be reunited one day.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I'm going to check in with you in a couple months and see how you're doing.
Wow, this is exciting. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You're welcome. So that's
wow, I'll be looking forward to it.
All right, good, good. All right, so Mr. Engineer, we're going to wind up a little bit early today. And I just want to say to all those out there, if you want the book, as Gwen said, you can go to gwenmcnutt.com. You can reach me at my webpage, closerwalkwithyou.com, and I'm glad to forward the information over to you. Angels never die. And with that, I'm going to say grace and peace, and have a good day.
Thank you for listening to The Journey 8. And please come back and join us again. Remember, be kind in all you do, and the kindness will come back to you. Grace and peace, Judy Hasner.